Welcome to Whiskey Cask, the Cask Strength podcast featuring news and interviews from the world of whiskey. I'm Mark Gillespie, and this is episode number 123 for December 16th, 2007. Coming up in a few minutes.
We tried to make a perfect harmony in the whiskey.
That's Hiroyoshi Miyamoto, the distillery manager at Suntory's Yamazaki Distillery in Japan. He has a history in Japan, the U.S., and Scotland, where he was deputy managing director at Morrison Bowmore for several years. We'll get his take on the differences between Japanese single malts and single malt scotch, and some of his comments may spark a few cries of outrage in Scotland. That's coming up in a few minutes, but first, let's look at the news. More new whiskeys to report on this week. The Glenrothes is releasing a limited edition 25-year-old single malt. Only 2,400 bottles will be available, and they're all destined for the duty-free market. The suggested retail price is £180, or about $370 U.S. There's an even more exclusive single cask Balvenie hitting the market. This one will only be available at Aelia's shops at Charles de Gaulle Airport in Paris. Only 191 bottles of the Balvenie Single Cask 1970 are available at €680 apiece. At the current exchange rate, that's just under $1,000 U.S. 2008 marks the 400th anniversary of legal distilling in the area around Bushmills in Ireland, and the distillery is releasing a special edition to celebrate. Bushmills 1608 will only be available in the U.S. during 2008, starting in February. After that, it'll be sold only at the distillery in Ireland and a few select duty-free locations. I'll have more details on this one and an interview with Colm Egan of Bushmills on an upcoming episode. More fallout now from the UB Group's buyout of White & Mackay earlier this year. India's Economic Times reports White & Mackay is now trying to buy out its U.S. distribution deal with Beam Global for the Dalmore single malts. Beam has handled U.S. distribution of the Dalmore for years now, but the Economic Times cites UB Group insiders in reporting that Vijay Mallya believes that Beam doesn't tap the Dalmore's full potential for U.S. sales because of a conflict of interest. Of course, Beam owns Laphroaig and Ardmore single malts, as well as the Teacher's blended scotch brand. Neither side is commenting on the report, and you'll find a link to the Economic Times article at the WhiskeyCast website. Now, let's update the saga of the Macallan 1856. If you've heard the last couple of episodes, you know about the bottle alleged to be a Macallan single malt distilled in 1856 that was pulled out of last week's auction at Christie's in New York. This was one out of a group of bottles that the Macallan bought on the open market several years ago. It later sold six of them to three private collectors. As I mentioned last time, I had asked the Macallan for its side of the story. Earlier this week, I received a response from Nick Palacci, the global PR director for malts at Macallan parent Edrington Group. I've posted his full response on the WhiskeyCast website, but to summarize, lab testing in 2004 proved several of those bottles to be of questionable authenticity. The Macallan offered to buy the bottles it had sold back from the collectors, and while two of them did sell their bottles back, the third did not, and that was the bottle that was to have been auctioned off at Christie's. Now for a bit of commentary. Christie's and Edrington have not disclosed the name of that individual. Personally, I'd love to know who he or she is, especially since that person knew there were authenticity problems at the time they consigned the bottle to Christie's for this auction, and apparently did not disclose that fact to Christie's. I'm not a lawyer, but that sure sounds like fraud to me, especially when the Christie's auction catalog estimated the bidding range for that bottle at up to $25,000. By the way, the other bottles remain in the Macallan's collection as examples of 19th century packaging only. Again, you'll find the Macallan's complete response at the WhiskeyCast website. Time now for the calendar of events brought to you by Laphroaig. The Scotch Malt Whiskey Society is holding Burns Suppers on January 22nd in Edinburgh and Leith, Scotland. The Astor Center in New York City will hold a Scotch and Chocolate pairing event on January 25th. Martin Duraz of Highland Park is bringing the Scotch, and Sage Friedman of Chocolat Michel Cluziel is bringing the Chocolate. The Victoria Whiskey Festival is the weekend of January 26th in Victoria, British Columbia. Whiskey Live Tokyo is February 10th, followed by Interwhiskey Hamburg in Hamburg, Germany, Whiskey Live in Auckland, New Zealand, and the International Malt Whiskey Festival in Ghent, Belgium, all the weekend of February 15th through the 17th. And no, you can't get to all three of them that weekend. That's the calendar of events brought to you by Laphroaig Porter Cask. Become a friend of Laphroaig and claim your own square foot of Isla at Laphroaig.com. Yamazaki's 15-year-old single malt was the winner of this year's Malt Maniacs Gentle Giant Award for Daily Drams. That's given to the best whiskey that's unpeated, unsherried, and unfinished, according to my fellow maniacs. I give them the credit for that one because the 15-year-old Yamazaki is one that Suntory doesn't generally export on a regular basis, if at all. Most of the world only gets the 12- and 18-year-old Yamazakis, though Suntory did bring a bourbon cask-aged version to the recent Malt Advocate Whiskey Fest in New York. That's where I sat down with Hiroyoshi Miyamoto, who likes to be called Mike, and is now distillery manager at Yamazaki.
I joined Suntory in 1978. I started as the sort of a staff member in the Yamazaki distillery. Then worked in there for 2 years. Then I came to the United States to run the small cooperage business for 5 years. And I learned a lot about wood that time. Then I came back to Japan to do the quality control. Okay? Then after that, and I became the whiskey blender. I did that for 3 years. Then I was given a task to do the a lot of purchasing of raw materials from United Kingdom. So I was posted in London office. There worked 5 years, and then I was asked to be a part of Morrison Bowman Distillers, which is Scotch whiskey company that Suntory acquired 1994. So there I worked almost 5 years in Scotland as the production director. Then I came back to Japan, did a bit of whiskey development thing, then became the head of the Hakushu Distillery. Then I came back to Morrison Bowman Distillers again to be a deputy managing director. Then I came back to Japan again to be a head of Yamazaki Distillery as now.
Tell me about the history of Yamazaki, because I know it's an unusual distillery compared to having centuries of history at some of the Scottish distilleries. The history here really only goes back about 80 years, if I'm correct on this.
That's right. And Yamazaki Distillery started off and distilling 1924. So we have an 83-year history of whiskey making. And Shinjiro Tori, the founder of Yamazaki Suntory organization, he wanted to create, a genuine whiskey outside of Scotland. And so his passion actually continued until now. We were sort of we inherited it, his blood. So in a sense, we have a DNA in our blood to create the genuine Japanese whiskey. To do so, we had a lot of experiments and developments, research, and particularly back in 87, 88, we had to stop production for 2 years to renovate whole production facilities. We had to jeopardize in a two-year production, though. After that, and we started off in production 89. Then 12 years afterwards, means 2001, 12-year Yamazaki became available. But actually, year 2003, we presented Yamazaki 12 years old to be judged at the ISC. Then we received a gold medal award. So then, as a whiskey engineer, I had a confidence within myself that all the renovation we did in back in 87, 88 really worked. And, you know, until then, we didn't know. Although, and among the whiskey, Suntory whiskey engineers, we knew that then, you know, quality has improved dramatically. And we were confident then, but we didn't know that how the consumer would react. And this time, in the rest of the world, actually reacted nicely. You see, we didn't know that then the consumers outside of Japan would like Suntory Yamazaki or not. We didn't know. But receiving the award at 2003, you know, given the confidence that then we did the right thing back in 87, 88.
What philosophy do you have when you set out to make a bottle of whiskey? What are you looking for when you try to produce that whiskey?
Well, we like to produce a genuine Japanese whiskey. So always we are asked, what is Japanese whiskey? And it's very difficult to describe because we try to make a perfect harmony in the whiskey. In other words, perfect balance. So none of the flavors stick out. Okay, all the different elements of flavors in there, but none of them stick out, all harmonized. That's the type of whiskey we always try to achieve.
It seems as though you've done that because the whiskeys I've tried from Suntory, basically the 12 and the 18 and now the 93 bourbon cask, they seem very smooth, very well balanced, and as you said, nothing sticks out. How then does that make the taste, how then do you get a unique taste if you try to make everything harmonized with nothing sticking out?
Well, that's why I said it's hard to describe, but you know, it's very difficult and to explain and you know with the wordings, okay. But if you just sample and you know just sip it and drink it, you notice, because you know first you don't notice anything sticking out, but gradually you know you just notice vanilla taste there, fruity taste there, creamy taste there, you know, all the other elements to be realized, you know, maybe 5 minutes, 10 minutes, it lingers along. So that tells, you know, how Yamazaki is well balanced, you know. How do I explain? We try to achieve the whiskey with the roundness. You know, roundness means a cube or a globe, okay? So nothing sticking out. But the volume of the globe is really big compared to the other whiskey. So you may not notice, you know, how good or how bad the whiskey, Yamazaki whiskey is, but it takes a bit of time to realize it. You know, once you just drink it, it takes time, maybe 10 minutes, then you realize, wow, another world. So that's the type of whiskey we try to make.
What did you learn from your time in Scotland that you use today when you're making your whiskeys in Japan?
Well,
both good and bad, because I'm sure there's some things you learned that you said, I never want to do that back in Japan.
Well, although that, although there's 83-year history of whiskey making in Japan, we learned a lot from Scotland. But to be honest with you, last 30 years or so, we passed, you know, the level of complexity in terms of whiskey production. So I shouldn't say this, but, you know, there are very few things to learn from Scotland and these days. I had to introduce a Suntory technique to the Morrison Bowmer, in a sense. Although we didn't do it apparently because it's insulting to the Scottish people. So that's the way that then I realized. We learned a lot from Scotland maybe 40, 50 years ago, but these days, they're learning something from us.
And there was also a heavy influence from the American distilleries, from the bourbon distilleries back in the early days too as well.
Well, actually we didn't try to make any bourbon type and whiskey in Japan at all. Having said that, then we have blend whiskey. Blended whiskey means that we have to use the grain whiskey as well. So technique of grain whiskey is very similar to bourbon whiskey. So in a sense, you know, we learned a bit of bourbon whiskey making as well.
How about the wood management? Where did you pick up the wood management skills? Is there a difference between Japanese oak and the wood you're using, or are you using American oak and European oak like the other distillers do?
Well, I mean, generally speaking, that you know, Scotch whiskey use the American type, you know, oak, and the European type oak. All right, so do we. But in addition to that, we have Japanese oak that is unique. Okay, so we have three types of wood. Then we have five different types of casks we use. So we need a complexity, variety, because you know. We are very much self-sufficient in Japan. We don't reciprocate whiskey each other among the you know, whiskey makers, because we are the you know, just almost majority of the whiskey maker. And you know, there are other whiskey makers in Japan, but they are too small to compare. But then you know, in Scotland, they have 85 different you know, active distilleries. So among them, you know, they actually reciprocate the whiskey each other. So they can help each other. But in Japan, we can't. So we have to be self-sufficient. To do so, we have to have a lot of variety in the distillation. We have to do a lot of variety in the wood type as well. That's why we have to pursue the possibility of the variety.
Is there a difference in the influence of Japanese oak compared to American or European oak? What difference does it add to the whiskey?
Well, it really, Japanese oak can, gives a very distinctive taste to the Yamazaki, because Mizunara, we call Mizunara Japanese oak, is very much oriental type of taste, oriental incense. That's the type of flavor we just you know, notice. It may not sound good to the American, you know, oriental incense. What is that? Okay, but very, very unique to oriental flavor. I mean, oriental flavor means something never European or Western people never sensed before. That type of flavor. So a lot of critics, European critics, and admire. We have that, you know, flavor in Yamazaki.
Going to the back to the spice or to the flavor question for a second, the incense type flavors. I know that we get a lot of that. Some of the very similar flavors. You get some of the smokiness, mint type flavors. A very interesting mix of flavors from Yamazaki whiskeys. We also get that from Western whiskeys as well. What should the average non-Japanese whiskey drinker know about Japanese whiskeys that we don't already know?
Well. It's very difficult because there isn't any distinctive difference in the, between, you know, Suntory, Yamazaki whiskey and the Scotch other single malts. And it's very difficult. You know, the American people, I mean, particularly American connoisseurs, know exactly what do we do. And I was really surprised at how knowledgeable those American connoisseurs are. And I've got lots of difficult questions to answer, like yourself. So there isn't much secret that we have to disclose to you. So you know much about it.
Well, I'm just saying, what should someone who is looking at a shelf of whiskeys at their retailer understand or know when they're looking, say, they see a Yamazaki, they see bourbons, they see scotches, and they're going, okay, Yamazaki, what's that like compared to the others? What, I've never tried this, I don't know, why should I try it?
Well, first of all, the Yamazaki's gotten both sweetness and dryness. It's perfect match. So most of the scotch and, either real sweet or real dry, particularly single malt. For example, Macallan is really sweet, opposed to Lafroy. Lafroy is really dry, okay, very, very distinctive. But then instead, Suntory has got both dryness and sweetness. So you can enjoy both of them at the one single malt.
Okay, that's what I was getting at with the previous question. Finally, the biggest question of all, how come we only get the 12 and the 18-year-old when you make so many other fine whiskies? How come the rest of the world only gets to see the 12 and the 18?
As far as we're concerned, even in Japan, we have main line of 12 and 18 of Yamazaki. And also we have small portion of 10-year-old Yamazaki. But also we have an extension of Yamazaki as a 25-year-old, but 25-year-old is not available to the rest of the world, only available in Japan, because only limited stock is available. Okay? So that's one of the reasons why, you can't get the other expression of Yamazaki. We don't have many whiskey stock, and although the young ones, okay, less than 10 years old, we have plenty, but then takes for a while to get matured. So please wait and see that the new expression, when we come up with a new expression. But then at the moment, we'd like to concentrate on 12 and 18 due to the availability of the stock.
And just the other, is that the same reason there's not enough stocks of, say, the Hakushu and your other distilleries available?
Hakushu is available. Hakushu is available. There are lots of, on the marketing point of view, okay, whether or not we should introduce Hakushu to the United States yet. Because Hakushu isn't that, well known, even in Japan yet. So, we are not confident yet that whether or not we should introduce Hakushu to the United States.
I don't think there's any question about Mike's confidence. I just hope he gets to share more of his whiskeys with the world. By the way, if you visit Japan, the Visitors Center at Yamazaki won Whiskey Magazine's Icons of Whiskey Award in 2006 as Best Visitor Attraction. It offers tours daily. That's all for this episode of Whiskey Cast. My email address for questions and suggestions is comments@whiskeycast.com. You'll find links to the stories in this episode, the calendar of events, a complete archive of past episodes, and the Whiskey Cast store, all at the Whiskey Cast website. The address is www.whiskeycast.com. Whiskey Cast is a production of MG Media, copyright 2007, and comes to you from the charming, yet regrettably dry town of Haddonfield, New Jersey. I'm Mark Gillespie, reminding you that when you drink, please drink responsibly. Thanks for listening.